You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, I'm back. Like that dog shit at the bottom of your boot at the end of the day. You're wondering where the smell comes from. Well, I'm back. Now, tonight, just in case you're interested in the type of country you live in, tonight we'll be looking at the background to the creation of the Australian Constitution, the document which regulates your relationship with the state as well as each other. I'm going to look at how could, after a 10-year debate, election of delegates, referendums, could they come up with a document that has no values, no aspirations, and no rights? So it'll be a fascinating night for the history buffs, and I promise you, you won't fall asleep. So it's the Footscray Hotel, 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start. 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start. The Footscray Hotel, 48 Hopkins Street, Footscray. And I'm warning you, they don't have food at the Footscray Hotel. You've got to bring your own. You are allowed to bring your own food, but there are a lot of beverages you can buy, and the key word is buy. So tonight at the Footscray Hotel, 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start, the background to that fascinating document, the Australian Constitution, a document I expect that you all put under your pillow after you've read one of the 128 sections. Now, on the 31st of August, that's Sunday the 31st, the West Papuan office is holding one of their regular shindigs. Now, we all know about Gaza, but we seem to forget that West Papua is 70 kilometres from the Australian coastline, that we're in bed with the Indonesian government, and that over a half a million West Papuans have died in the struggle for independence over the last 60 years. So the West Papuan office, which is financed through the West Papuan Rent Collective, which I'm the convener of, which means I don't have to have any worries about going to Indonesia for a holiday, because I can't, and I'm blessed for that reason. 1 p.m. lunch, then guest speakers, then the West Papuan office auction. So it's a great way to meet West Papuan activists. It's at 838 Collins Street. Just walk round to the back where there's a meeting room and area where you can have lunch. Obviously, there'll be lots of people there. Hopefully, you can come along, because it's ordinary Australians, people like you and me, who keep the office afloat via contributions via the West Papuan Rent Collective. So see what your money is doing. If you're interested in the West Papuan independence struggle and the struggle for human rights, which is a daily issue in West Papua, come along next Sunday, 31st of August, 1 p.m. for lunch, and then you can mix in with the crowd, listen to the guest speakers, and see what you think. And hopefully you may even join the West Papuan Rent Collective, and that would solve your problems about going to Indonesia for a holiday. Here we are. The sacred cows have come in. They are members of the West Papuan Rent Collective, believe it or not. Every single sacred cow. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne, Radical Radio. My name is Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting the program. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. There are thousands of podcasts you can choose from, and if you don't like the Anarchist World this week, there's many other podcasts on community radio 3CR, and obviously many of the community radio stations across Australia which are affiliated with the community radio network have their own podcasts. And I think it's important in a period where people think that radio is no longer relevant, that to remember it's community radio which brings you the information which other radio stations are either government gilded or corporate owned, can't be bothered bringing to you. If you're wondering what anarchy is all about, anarchos without rulers. considering the state of the world today, would be a wonderful thing not to have rulers, whether they're elected, self-appointed. It's a society where wealth is held in common and used for the common good. And why do we use those little words, in common? It's very simple. What creates most of the problems we face in the world today are inequalities in power and wealth. And that's what rulers are all about, maintaining those inequalities in power and wealth. Now, obviously, if you've got something better to do, you may as well do it. But if you don't got anything to do, well, listen to The Anarchist World this week. And if you like it, tell your friends. If you don't like it, tell your friends. They may have better taste than you have. All right, let's move on. Higher living standards are the holy grail. You like that? Higher living standards are the holy grail. That's what the Australian Treasurer, Mr. Jim Chalmers, stated when he was talking about the productivity sideshow, which we are currently involved in. Higher living standards of the Holy Grail. Well, I don't think that's right. I know that's not right. The Holy Grail in Australia is not about higher living standards. The Holy Grail isn't productivity. The Holy Grail is to ensure that all Australians, all people living on the Australian continent, whether they're permanent residents or citizens, have access to this country's extraordinary wealth. I can't believe the Holy Grail are higher living standards when so many Australians find themselves in a situation where they aspire to have a living standard, let alone a higher living standard, where one third of the country relies on inadequate social security benefits to survive, and 80% of the country relies on loans from financial institutions to keep a roof over their head or survive. Just extraordinary. Now, obviously, there are a proportion of Australians that have higher living standards. But the fact is, we shouldn't be aspiring to higher living standards. We should be aspiring to the idea that all Australians have higher living standards, not just a minuscule minority. Just extraordinary when you think about the situation in this country. It's just extraordinary. Now, you may find yourself fixated on the World Wide Web or television or whatever, and you can see how the rest of the world lives and the situation, the diabolical situations many human beings face on the planet today. And that's understandable. But when you look at our own country, well, it's not our country, obviously, but when you look at Australia and you look around and you think to yourself, we have 27 million people living on a continent, an extraordinarily rich continent, and every day we're faced with reports and commissions, royal commissions and investigations into issues which, when you really think about it, are interlinked with poverty. That's right. Interlinked with poverty in this resource-rich country. And every day we see those who have assets grow their assets And we see 40% of the population owning 1% of the country's wealth and 1% owning 40% of the country's wealth. And you begin to understand why you have private charities raising money to send Australian kids to public schools. Now, this productivity sideshow, or whatever they call it, I don't know what they call it, but I'll call it a sideshow. It's nothing more than a sideshow. Now, obviously, productivity is based on a number of factors. And one of the factors is investment. Now, if you don't invest in younger people, especially in the public education sector, and if you place fees on people to access higher education, you destroy any chance of increased productivity in about 60% of the population. And that's what we see today. And when you talk about investment, we're always talking about private investment in this country. Private investment. Reaching out to overseas investors so they can make a buck at our expense. And somehow we're supposed to be grateful, and the key word is grateful, for the crumbs that are brushed off the corporate table in our direction. Can you imagine that? We're supposed to be grateful that the gap between the haves and the have-nots and all those in between continues to grow exponentially as I speak. And when we see a government talking about productivity, they're not talking about productivity in terms of return to the population, but productivity in terms of returns to those who own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Now, we may, courtesy of the productivity sideshow, come up with some pre-planned government initiatives to increase productivity. But productivity is not going to increase until we share the gains. Whether we share the gain through a taxation system or whether we share the gains through a profit division system. And what I mean by that is that the most successful institutions in a capitalist society are those which share their profits with the workers who create those profits, not just in terms of individual contracts or collective bargaining or a wage, but in terms of a percentage of the profits made by that corporation or collective. Now, why should we be interested in increasing productivity for a minuscule minority when the government of the day is not willing to squeeze that minuscule minority to share those increasing profits, not just through a taxation system? And that's the dilemma. Why bother when you know that the bulk of that increased profits from increased productivity, whether it's through private investment or speeding up the workplace, will go directly to that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. And I can see nothing in this productivity sideshow which addresses this question. The second question the productivity sideshow should be looking at, something which I raise almost every week on this program, is the nationalisation of this country's natural resources. We should be the richest sovereign nation state on the planet. We should be in a position to pay compensation to this nation's First Nations people. We should be in a position, with the growth of artificial intelligence and the decreased need for human involvement in the productive process, we should be in a position to be one of the first sovereign nation states on the planet to have a universal basic income, so everybody is raised out of the poverty traps they find themselves in today. Now, we may pat ourselves on the back because of a number of important initiatives which have been incorporated into legislation, like a universal healthcare system, a pharmaceutical benefits scheme, national disability insurance scheme. But they didn't come out of thin air. They came out of struggle, decades of struggle. I remember being involved in the National Disability Insurance debate and activity for over four decades before it was taken up by governments. And let's not forget, any government which introduces those reforms after they've been initiated by the public and pushed for a variety of mechanisms. So obviously we can increase productivity, but you don't increase productivity by waving a big stick and saying we need to increase productivity or opening the marketplace, you know, to foreign investors. You increase productivity by investing in the country, not giving the corporate sector carte blanche to do what it likes. Look at the farcical situation that was raised once again by BlueScope Steel in the last 24 hours. The fact that gas prices are so high on the eastern seaboard of this country that businesses will shut down. Major manufacturing businesses will shut down. Is it because we have to import gas? No. I think after Qatar, Australia is the second largest exporter of natural gas on the planet. It's because no allowance was made to reserve gas supply for Australian manufacturing consumers. How extraordinary. But this is the nature of the society we find ourselves in. So if we want to, if they want us to increase productivity, we need to see some type of arrangement where the profits which are made by increasing productivity are actually shared by the population as a whole, not just go into the pockets of the major shareholders of private corporations. And at the same time, we should see an increasing role for government in actually creating and owning institutions, whether it's manufacturing or production, which are essential for human existence. I'll give you an example, a funny example. And again, it's just, it's extraordinary how simple life is. I mean, we're told it's complex, we can't do anything about it, we need to do an investigation, then we need to hold a royal commission, then we need to hold a royal commission to the royal commission, and then we need to put it on a shelf and forget about it once the media hype disappears. Well, it's simple. Housing. Every dog in society has an answer. Give builders less regulations. Put more public money into the private sector. Change the rules in terms of where you can build and where you can't build or what you can build. But does anybody ever talk about public housing? The state intervening and creating homes, possibly through a spot purchasing program around the country, possibly by building new homes? How about the million homes that are currently not lived in for a variety of reasons? Pass legislation to spot purchase those homes at a reduced rate. But we don't use the P word anymore. We have a Prime Minister who was raised in public housing, whose mother was in a single, enjoyed single parent benefit where she wasn't forced to go to work after the child turned eight, who's forgotten what gave him that head start. He's forgotten. And around the country, we have various state governments, especially in Victoria, doing everything they can to destroy the public health, public housing sector and giving over their responsibility to put a roof over people's head to the private sector. So no wonder every day you hear the same story. People can't afford to buy in the private market. They can't afford the rents. Two individuals in a household have to work full time to meet their financial commitments. And no wonder we talk about increasing anxiety, increasing psychological issues, increasing suicides, increasing loneliness, decreased interaction between human beings, increased addiction. I understand that as far as illegal drugs are concerned, that consumption in Australia has increased by almost 25% in the last 12 months. Irrespective of the laws which are in place. So maybe there's something fundamentally wrong with privatising every aspect of our existence and expecting people to survive in such an environment. Maybe. Think about it. Will the productivity sideshow give us any good solutions? Will they be talking about a universal basic income? Will they be talking about sharing profits if there is increased productivity? Will they be talking about ensuring that this country's resources are owned, managed and exploited by the government of the day? Or will we be talking about increasing initiatives for the private sector, giving them a little bit more public money so that they can brush off a few more crumbs off the corporate table, which we can fight amongst ourselves for? You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Well, two wars. Well, that we're aware of. Obviously, there are a lot of wars, which nobody talks about. For example, the continuing struggle for independence in West Papua, which barely rates a mention in the Australian media, irrespective of anywhere else in the world. And if you are listening to this program, I'd just like to invite you on the 31st of August to the West Papuan Rent Collective gathering, which you have three or four times a year, which is open to anybody. You don't have to be a member of the West Papuan Rent Collective. The West Papuan Rent Collective was set up over 10 years ago. We have been paying the rent on an office at 838 Collins Street in Melbourne to act as an organising and diplomatic centre for the West Papuan independence movement. Independence movement which exists not 10,000 kilometres away, but 70 kilometres away from the Australian coastline in West Papua. A struggle which has been conducted now for over 60 years, both a political struggle and an armed struggle. A struggle which barely rates a mention in this country. So if you're interested in learning about this struggle on our very doorstep, the West Papuan independence struggle, I invite you to join us on Sunday, the 31st of August. Lunch from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Donations happily accepted. Guest speakers from 2 to 3, and then an auction after 3 p.m. to raise money for the West Papuan Rent Collective. It's essential that the West Papuan independence movement has an open office via which they can promote their struggle for independence. And the thing about when you look at the membership of the West Papuan Rent Collective, those people who donate money, a dollar a day, towards the rent which needs to be raised to pay for the office, it's usually, you know, people on pensions who make the sacrifice, people on low wages, people who are retired. I haven't seen any millionaires or multimillionaires or CEOs or Australian politicians be part of the West Papuan Rent Collective. Open invitation, come and join us, have lunch, listen to some guest speakers, ask questions about the independence movement, join us. It's the least we can do. A dollar a day, that means we, considering how much coffee costs in Melbourne these days, it means you would have to forego yourself, oh, I know it's a big sacrifice, oh, at least 1.2 cups of coffee a week at your local cafe. I don't know if you can do it. I have trouble doing it, but I do it. So come along, meet the people involved, get involved in that struggle. It's our struggle. It's in our part of the world. And let's not forget that as far as Australia is concerned, West Papua doesn't even exist. I'll show you how bad the situation is. A number of years ago, I think it was about a decade ago, a West Papuan activist, a young woman in Darwin, had a bicycle accident, and died. And a member of the Senate wanted to raise a condolence motion. And the condolence motion wasn't passed. The Liberal Party and the Liberal National Party and the Labor Party joined forces in order to deny the condolence motion, because the word West Papua was in the condolence motion. What an extraordinary state of affairs. But we all have power. Whether we believe we're powerless or not, ultimately, we are responsible for the decisions we make. Obviously, we're buffeted by a wider world, by our personal issues, interfamily issues, work issues, societal issues. But ultimately, we make that decision where our dollars go. And if you do have a spare dollar a day, I encourage you to join the West Papuan Independence Office and keep the office going and keep the hope that West Papuans have in their hearts of enjoying independence.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
All right, let's move on. Resistance finally materialises in Israel in the Gaza, to the Gaza slaughter. Now, it's interesting to see a war criminal, Mr. Netanyahu, the Prime Minister, carry on about how weak the Prime Minister of Australia, Mr. Albanese, is. Now, what I find extraordinary about the current Israeli government is that they think that they speak for the worldwide Jewish community, both secular and religious. It's as if they're conducting a holy war. And they speak for every member of the Jewish community. Now, when I speak about the slaughter in Gaza, and I'm sure most of the same of you, is we're talking about the Israeli state. And the Israeli state's control by a group of elected, let's not forget that, politicians who have a fascist agenda. Now, I assume Mr. Netanyahu, the war criminal, thinks that being tough, you measure it by the number of people you kill and the number of children you slaughter and the number of people you put under pressure through denying them food and water and shelter. I assume that's what he means by tough, eh? Extraordinary. What an extraordinary situation. Now, I see the world is coming together. Well, parts of the world. In terms of trying to halt the slaughter in the Ukraine. And good luck to them. But the fact is, it's a tale of two cities, isn't it, really, when you think about it? About the amount of effort and energy which is going into stopping the slaughter in the Ukraine and the effort and energy which is going into stopping the slaughter in Gaza. It's chalk and cheese. It's as if we, some people count and other people don't. And it's an extraordinary situation. Whether anything will happen in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia, is a matter for debate. I'm not talking about not having a peace agreement between these two neighbours, in inverted commas. But the fact is, a human life is a human life, whether it's in the Ukraine or whether it's in Gaza or the West Bank or the Congo. A human life is a human life. And why is it that in the public imagination or in the type of coverage which occurs in the social media, that one struggle seems to be more important than another struggle? Why is it we never hear about the carnage that's been occurring in West Papua for the last 60 years? Or the little bit of coverage about the civil war in Sudan? Or the civil war in Myanmar, which is currently reaching extraordinary levels? It's fascinating. It's hurtful, but fascinating. What we think is important and what we don't think is important, what we think is important as a nation is what, you know, suits us, what's in our national interests. What an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in 2025. hate speech. Now, I find it extraordinary how the Australian media falls over itself regarding the issue of hate speech. You see, hate speech, in the majority of cases, is an individual issue. Not in terms of the damage it causes, but in terms of the person or individual that is promoting a particular issue. And we see the media fall over itself, especially with some type of poor sporting personality, regarding how horrible and nasty and evil and how people should be disciplined, you know, and how hurtful it is, and the list goes on and on. And I'm thinking to myself, well, fair enough. But there's hate speech and hate policies. So what's a hate policy? Hate policies are policies which are introduced through legislation by government, which has a deleterious effect on the community as a whole or sections of the community. And although our media, or the Western media, loves to pile on when it comes to individual hate speech, it's a different issue when it comes on to legislated hate policies. Remember the lack of interest for years in the illegal robo-debt tyranny which was unleashed on those least able to defend themselves in our society, and the fact that no one has been held accountable or responsible, or the hate policies which have been promoted by the Victorian Labor government that destroy any sense of community in terms of public housing through their anti-public housing, pro-privatisation policies. And to me, that's a hate policy. But again, there's minimal debate. It's all about housing affordability. Extraordinary when you think about it. The number of hateful policies that have been introduced over the years. The hateful policies which saw community child care or early learning centres pushed aside in favour of mega corporations which have cut corners in order to increase profitability, and as we see now, put an increasing number of very young children at risk. Well, the government sat on its fingers. Government sat on their fingers for years. And we saw the same issues crop up in the aged care sector, where hateful policies, which privatised, handed over lock, stock and barrel, the majority of aged care centres to the private sector. And we've seen the recurrent issues in that sector. This, to me, are hateful policies which have extraordinary ramifications for an increasing number of people. Or the hateful policies which has been legislated to ensure that anybody who hasn't got the disposable income, or the parents who've got the disposable income to pay up front for their education in the tertiary sector, will be spending decades of their lives trying to pay off that debt. Now, obviously, there's hate speech in our community, and it's an issue. But in the majority of cases, it's not about organisations, it's about individuals. But when we see governments enact legislation which has profound impacts on an increasing number of people, then we begin to realise that there are such things as hateful policies which need to be resisted at every level. The problem in Australia, as I mentioned last week when I spoke about the Australian Constitution, a constitution devoid of values, aspirations and rights, the fact that what we are seeing today is an increasing intrusion by the state into the ability of people to freely articulate their opinions, freely associate, and the ability to demonstrate. And the problem in Australia in 2025, and we've had this problem since 1901 when the Australian Constitution was enacted, the problem is we have no constitutional protection for the individual from the arbitrary exercise of state power. So centimetre by centimetre, inch by inch, we are seeing the state intrude into what are described as common law rights. Because under the Australian Constitution, common law rights are always second to constitutional arrangements. So we are seeing more draconian legislation being put in place in terms of the ability of people to demonstrate. More draconian sentences being handed out to people because of their resistance to the state, not in terms of violent resistance, but in terms of passive resistance. So in many regards, in Australia, as far as the Western world is concerned, we have almost fewer rights than somebody living in communist China. I know it sounds a bit melodramatic, doesn't it? Fewer rights than somebody who lives in communist China. But a fact is a fact. As I keep saying, and we've been, talking about this and protesting about this since the year 2000, under Australia's current anti-terrorist legislation, the fact is that if the state wishes to move on an individual or an organisation, as we've seen with Palestine Action in Great Britain, it is freely able to do so. Not because of violent resistance, but because of passive resistance to government policy. So if you think you're a protected, you're not. The only thing that protects you and me currently is our inability to be a threat to the status quo, an intellectual threat to the status quo. I'd like to clear that up. We are a threat to no one currently. But if by some chance more and more people began to talk about a universal basic income and took action about a universal basic income, or more and more people talked about sharing, increasing profits, or more and more people demanded the state intervened in the mineral export sector to ensure the majority of profits went to the Australian people, there is nothing to prevent the current government passing legislation, which they would with the assistance of their Liberal National Party colleagues who sing from the same hymn sheet, to actually make that resistance illegal. while we are inconsequential, insignificant, marginalised, we're no threat. But if our ideas begin to percolate around the country, around the nation, that if people begin to demand a fairer share, a bigger slice of the cake, not just crumbs being brushed off the corporate table, then you would see who is responsible for the current legislative agenda, the current Productivity Commission. And it's not you and me. It's not people earning a wage. It's not people on Social Security benefits. It's not people in small business. It's once again that small section of society that somehow always seems to find a way to avoid their responsibilities to the rest of the community. And somehow we're supposed to kowtow and say, oh, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Now, listening to the Anarchist World this week, you'd think I was a little bit cynical. I'm not cynical. If I was cynical, I wouldn't be here wasting my time as a volunteer in community radio. If I was cynical, I'd be out fishing, collecting coins, sunning myself, if I could afford it, skiing. I'd become totally depoliticised, and that's what happens. You see, what happens when you're an activist is that you become burnt out. And as I keep saying, there are two types of activists. There are meteorites and stars. Meteorites are going to change the world, and they burn out and they disappear and they start collecting coins or playing games on the net, writing poetry. And there are stars. Stars are there, they shine forever. And they shine forever because they understand you are not going to change the world tomorrow. All you can do is keep the embers alight, because when the embers go out, it is very difficult to rub two sticks together and start the embers again. The embers need to be kept alight. And that's what we do in the Anarchist World, or that's what we try to do in the Anarchist World this week. We try to keep those embers of resistance alight by encouraging people to become involved in various activities. You don't have to be involved in the activities that I personally promote. That's up to you. But the important thing is not to be cynical. Cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. The best way to ensure the status quo continues ad nauseam is for people to believe you cannot fight City Hall. You can't change things. It's impossible. You shouldn't put your head above the parapet, otherwise it's going to be shot off. The fact is that as a human beings, we have come an extraordinarily long way. Although we see pockets of barbarism and inequality in our society, the fact is what was acceptable a century ago is no longer acceptable. And it's no longer acceptable because of people like you who've put your foot down and said, this can't go on. There may be a price to pay for being an activist, but I'm willing to pay that price. Now, we would still have slavery. Women would be treated as chattels. people would be slaughtered because of their sexual orientation. There would be no pharmaceutical benefits scheme or a universal health insurance scheme or a national disability insurance scheme without that struggle which occurred over decades to ensure governments use some of the revenue which was created to look after the interests of people. None of this would have been possible if we were cynical and we said nothing will ever change. As I keep saying, cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. It is what is used to ensure we continue to ignore the possibility of changing the reality we face. Every human advance which has been made, doesn't matter in what part of the world, is littered with the corpses of those who have been sacrificed in order for those advances to be enjoyed by the rest of us. And the tragedy of a society which believes that history began when we woke up this morning is that we have no understanding of why we find ourselves in a situation where so many of our needs in Australian society are met today. Not all, but so many. And they are met because of the struggles of past generations. This is a continent which is littered with the blood and bones of generations of people. People who came here after colonisation began and people who are here for over 60,000 years before colonisation began. It is a nation state which is based on brutality and inequality. But human beings, countless human beings, nameless human beings, have been involved in that struggle to create a more egalitarian community where both wealth and power is shared. And although we may move backwards, we also move forwards. And while we are willing to challenge those who own the means of production, distribution, exchange, and communication, those who determine the parliamentary agenda, the opportunity for change is there. And the great thing about living in Australia in 2025 is that spirit of resistance is still alive. Although most of the population is apathetic for a variety of reasons, and one of the reasons is their cynicism regarding the possibility of change, the fact is that every day more and more people are saying to themselves, I no longer want to belong to the Gunna tribe. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And more people are saying to themselves, I no longer want to belong to the somebody should do something about that tribe. Because initially it's the individual which acts as a spark for change, for egalitarian change. And then that individual lights a fire which is contagious. And other individuals join. As we saw in the Palestinian struggle a week or two ago when over 300,000 people were involved in that protest. As we see in the resistance regarding changes to this country's economy to address the climate emergency. As we see in terms to the rewriting, resist to the rewriting of history that this country belonged to no one at the time of colonisation. And the list goes on and on. And to a significant degree, this is due to the work of individuals, as well as groups, but mainly individuals. And the Eureka Australia Medal was instituted by the Anarchist Media Institute and the Reclaim the Radical Spirit of the Eureka Rebellion group in 2005 to reward those individuals who, through their individual actions, through their actions, have initiated change which has improved the lives of many people. So Eureka Medal nominations are now open. So if you know somebody who should receive a Eureka Medal, and we give out 6 Eureka Medals on the 3rd of December at Bakery Hill, now's the time to send in your nomination. You can email it to info@pibci.net. You can leave nomination details on 0439 395 489, and you can even write a little speech and send it to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. So you've been listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. YouTube channels, public interest before corporate interests, josephtoscano.nam. You can join public interest before corporate interest today. Go to pibci.net. PIBCI.net. You can join online as I speak. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. That's 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. And if you're listening to this, The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, ring up the manager of the community radio station and congratulate them for broadcasting The Anarchist World this week. And if your local community radio station is affiliated Community Radio Network and doesn't listen and doesn't broadcast The Anarchist World this week, give them a ring and ask them why not. They can broadcast it tomorrow. Thanks you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.